Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight, our guest is Michael Gaughan, owner of the South Point. This is an unusual case. I'm a fan of the sports show called Mike and Mike in the Morning. Today I get to do a Michael and Michael in the Evening. I think that's kind of neat. I may not get to do that again. So this show is being taped a couple weeks early, and so there may be some casino news that happened just the day before the show, and if that happens, you aren't going to get it here tonight. So both Shaq and I are otherwise occupied when you're hearing this. So this is being taped actually the day after the Shirley show. So those of you who remember when Shirley was a guest on the show, this is being taped the next day. Now, something interesting happened at the Palms in a drawing, and it isn't unique to the Palms. It just happened there. It could happen anywhere. So let me give you the details of it, and then Shaq and I will discuss what we think should have been done, and then we're going to ask Mr. Gaughan what would happen if this actually happened at the South Point. In February, there was a three-week drawing where Friday and Saturday nights of each of 3 weeks, five winners were given a small amount of money and told to come back at the end of the month, the last Saturday of the month, for a major giveaway. So there were a total of 30 people there for the major giveaway. 25 of those people ended up with $150 for showing up, basically. And five people got between $1,000 and $5,000. You had to be there to win. Now, the day before this final drawing, one of the players who had two entries into this final had a heart attack, and he's in the hospital. And it's a must be there to win drawing, but he's in the hospital and he can't be there. So the day of the drawing, before the drawing happened, he called up the slot club booth and said, "I can't be there. I'm in the hospital. So I would, whether I'm there or not, isn't going to affect anybody else's chances. So I'm going to request that I get an average score." It happened that the average on this drawing was about $450 per person, if you take all 30 prizes and divide by 30. So he was basically asking for $900. And so, now, Michael Shackelford, if you were the casino, how do you think you would have responded to this?
I would have looked at the player's history and whether or not he was a nice person. And assuming that he was a strong player, I think I would have allowed it, because giving him the money is not inconveniencing any other players. Now, if this were the kind of drawing where if somebody doesn't show up and they call somebody else, my answer would be different. But in this situation, I'd go ahead and honor the request.
Would it matter? You know, some casinos would base their decision on whether the player is a profitable player from the casino's point of view. That is, if he's a big slot player, they're going to let him have the money for sure. If he's a video poker player that they were thinking maybe they don't want him anyway, they would be less inclined. Some people look at this as not fair, but life is not fair. Would that affect your decision at all, Michael?
It would. If I ran a casino, I would definitely protect and take the best care of my most profitable players, and that would definitely influence my decision. However, I would also look at just whether or not the player is a nice person, and if he treated the staff nicely, I'd be more inclined to be nice to him back.
This would be an extra reason to tip on jackpots, so in case this happens to you.
Well, you know, it's not just the tipping. I think that just showing basic courtesy and kindness to people goes further than tipping.
All right, Mr. Gunn. Now, this happened at the Palms, but it's not hard to imagine something similar happening at the South Point. If it did, what would happen?
Well, first of all, I disagree with Michael. You can't base your decision on whether you like the customer or not. That's like giving the big busted girl a raise and the small busted girl not a raise.
Some of us don't have a problem with that philosophy.
I tend to think that happens in Vegas.
But it's
especially in Vegas.
You must be consistent. I've never had this kind of drawing that they had. In this case, the fellow, you could have given him two of the lowest prizes. 150 each. You could have given them 300 if you wanted to do that. But I'm saying, once you start making exceptions, you can't make exceptions for the people you like and the people you don't like. You must try to treat everybody the same. If this was a drawing where it's advertised, you must be present to win. And the big drawing is $5,000.
Uh-huh.
And you decide, well, because the person is in the hospital, you're going to let him be in the drawing, and he wins the $5,000, and he's not there to pick it up in the crowd. You have a problem.
Yes, you do.
I'm saying this was a little different type of a guy. This was more of a bounce back contest where you pre-won and then
right.
And then
you had to qualify.
To qualify to win. I've never had one of those, but I'm saying let's say it was one of mine with a car.
Uh huh.
And the person's name gets drawn, and that person happened to be in the hospital that night.
Too bad.
That's too bad. I'm sorry, it's too bad. They still get the consolation. They still get the car because they got 24 hours to get the car. But any bonus that would go with the car, they would not get.
Well, I agree with you in the car example, but in this case, the player could be secretly given the money, and no other player would ever have to know.
Well, yeah, but you're doing it because you like the player.
Yes.
See, you, Mike, I like. I might do that for you. I would definitely not do it for your partner here.
Thank you.
As long as I can still keep teaching classes there, I suppose I can get over that. It's similar in the sense that it was a player dispute at a casino. Somebody's name was called, and this was one that you had to show up in a minute and a half. And they showed up after 30 seconds. And they had their driver's license with them, but they did not have their club card. And the rule said that when you come up there, you have to have both your driver's license and your club card. And she said she left it in one of the machines, and she was playing earlier that day. They go, sorry, no card, no prize. So she goes away, goes to the booth, and they give her a card immediately because they have what that casino, something they call the Legends card. Which basically, I don't know the exact numbers, but these are for people who lose $50,000 a year or more, is basically what Legends is all about. So she comes back, and now she wanted the prize. And this would inconvenience others, because several others, if they were formerly third place, they got moved up to second, and the person who was originally 11th now is in the drawing, and otherwise not. So they can't pay her and pay them both. People are yelling and screaming. They go to the casino shift boss to make an executive decision, and he says she has a Legends card. Pay her. What the casino did in that case is they assumed she was not in the drawing, and they paid everybody as announced. So 11, And then they gave her the second place money, which she had qualified. So that particular night, they gave out 11 prizes because this person was particularly worthy because they had a Legends card. Would you have handled it that way, Michael Shackelford?
I certainly would not inconvenience any other players, so I would have done the drawing as normal. She did not have her card, so call somebody else. And if they want to quietly appease her with an additional $5,000 out of their own pocket, go ahead. And in this case, my answer would be the same, as I would look at the value of this player. And again, if I personally like them, and how mad this person seems to be, you know, what are my chances of losing her business if I say no? And I'll factor all those things in and make a decision. So I can't just say a firm yes or no.
And Mr. Gunn, did you want to, if this happened at your place?
Well, this did not happen at my place.
It did not happen at your place.
On my drawings, if that person is as well known as you say she was in the casino, I don't see why the part about having a driver's license and your club card, that was moot. You know the customer. She won. You give it to her.
Okay.
We've had drawings where the people don't have their club cards on them and they're there. We pay. I mean, the person says I'm so and so, and it is so and so. I left my wallet at home. If it turns out that it isn't that person who claims it, then the second place person moves up to it. But it would never. We had several occasions with the people. Lady came around. First of all, I give them 10 minutes. I don't give them a minute and a half. We had a lady from the bingo that left her purse one night, and she got there with about 30 seconds to spare. We gave her that. We gave it to her.
When it gets to be that you're the primary, what we're talking about, we're going to talk about what makes promotions different at the South Point, and this sounds like one of the ways. Although this was probably not in your original list, Michael Shackelford, there was an announcement earlier this week. There was a court ruling about a baccarat player who got some money and overpaid, and Harrah's didn't want to let him keep the money. So what do you know about this?
As I understand it, the table had a $2,000 maximum bet, and the player bet $3,000 and won. And about half an hour later, some suits came up and said, you overbet, and you should have only been paid based on a $2,000 win. And he bet the bankers, which pays $950 on $1,000, so they wanted $950 back. And the player asked to see proof of this, and they declined to show it. And then the player said, well, then I'm not going to pay. And I may not have all the details right, but gaming got involved. And I think after gaming got involved and threatened to arrest him for stealing the money, then he reluctantly paid it, but under protest. Is that how you understand
it? Something like that. And I mean, my gut feeling as a player was that if he had lost that bet, those 3,000 in chips would have gone into the rack immediately. And so if they accept the bet, my opinion as a player is that he should have been paid despite what the limits were. If they accept the bet and then they roll the cards to see what the results are, he should be paid.
I agree 100%. It's up to the dealer to police the game, and if the player bets more than the maximum and they don't call it, then that bet stands, in my opinion.
Is that the way you would run things at your casino, Mr. Gunn?
We run things where if a person overbets, like say it's a $2,000 limit and he bets $3,000, if he loses the hand and the player is not sure what he has bet, the player counts it down. If he bets more than $2,000, he gets that back. If it's a losing bet, if by chance we don't catch it, and he either gets paid or he loses. And half an hour later, we just go on with life. I think coming down half an hour later, personally, I think I was ludicrous. I don't know what hotel you're talking about, but half an hour later, and they do have tape of it. They have to have tape of it.
Right.
We settle many disputes by showing the player the tape.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was concerned why Harrah's would make such a big deal of $950. I mean, they went through considerable negotiation and lawyers and all kinds of things for a rather piddly amount of money and bad press. You know, whether they win or lose, this is something players are not going to feel good about.
Yeah, I agree with you. And what's your opinion, hypothetically, is let's say that the maximum bet was not the issue, that they just overpaid the player.
Overpaid the...
Yeah. For example, the dealer incorrect... Let's say that the maximum was $5,000 and the dealer incorrectly thought that the player bet $3 when he really only bet $2, so overpaid him $950. And I've heard of lots of situations where the casino will come down and explain that there was a dealer error and we would like... the amount of the error back. And I think they're fully entitled to do that.
They are. And my, as a player, when I was playing table games and I was overpaid, my general philosophy was shut up about it. If the casino does not bring this up, I do not bring it up either. If they underpay me, I bring it up every time. And so that would have been my philosophy then, and it still is. If it's like a change girl gives, and I give her a 10 for change, and she happens to give me change for a 20, that I'll correct immediately because my understanding is the change girl has to make that up out of her own pocket, and anybody working as a change girl needs more money more than I do. But if it's not going to be traced back to me, I'll keep it. If the casino comes back, and it has happened on a couple of occasions, I will give them the money for several reasons, including future welcome on the property. If I refuse to do it, and they say, we can't legally collect it from you, but you're no longer welcome here, that would be a pretty big punishment for a lot of places. So before we get to your segment, do you have anything to add on this particular?
I would say in the case of the casino you're talking about, they probably paid more for the attorneys than what they got back.
For sure. This is $950 what we're talking about, and attorneys are several hundred an hour, and it was appealed and blah, blah, blah. So it was by a factor of 10 or 100. All right. Michael Gaughan has been around casinos forever, almost. He's the son of Jackie Gaughan, who owned the El Cortez and other downtown casinos for years. In 1979, Michael Gaughan opened up the Barbary Coast, the corner of Flamingo and the Strip, that later became the hub of Coast casinos. These casinos were later sold to Boyd Gaming, and then later Gaughan himself bought back the South Coast Casino, which was renamed to South Point. He's been a successful race car driver, and his love of horses led him to establish the South Point Equestrian Center, which has room for 1,200 horses and hosts many events in the arena, both equestrian and otherwise. In 2009, Michael Gaughan was enshrined in the Gaming Hall of Fame. Michael Gaughan, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you.
Good, and we're glad to have you back. We're sorry that you had to come back, and we know you're busy, and we thank you for it. Now, then the month is just ending, March. Players earn free buffets for a modest amount of play. And so the lines at the buffet have been a little bit longer than usual. Every other casino other than the South Point has VIP lines or handicap lines. You don't. Everybody's equal. Can you tell us why you do things this way?
I've always liked to... People do not like being walked around. And all the players are important to me. I come out of downtown. The smaller players have always been the backbone of my business. If it's a big player, I'll get him around the line. but for everybody else, everybody stands in line. We have a seating area over the handicapped people. I don't make them stand in line, we keep it to where everybody's is treated the same in my hotels. And when I had the five properties, it was the same way there.
So is this more because you believe that it's in a classless society, or you think that it's off-putting to the low players when they see a VIP line that they're not eligible to stand in, and they see people that they deem to be of a higher status than them waltzing in ahead of them?
Well, it goes back to kind of what we talked about. Should we give the player that we like the money? Or we don't like them, we don't give them the money. What is a VIP player? I mean, what is the cutoff? And in my way, I'm saying that anybody really important will get around. But normally, and my lines are not normal. Other than the two Veterans Day where I give the free meals. Normally, my lines aren't too long.
And I have to give you credit for that. I've never seen a long line at the South Point.
Other than the club booth, there are some promotions that are heavy at the club booth where everybody has to go to the booth, and that line can be annoyingly long, and everybody waits in the same line. So, although I have been at many casinos standing in the VIP line and have been told off by somebody who's has been waiting for 25 minutes in the non-VIP line and is rather annoyed at me for... moving to the front of the line. So I understand both sides of it, but as somebody who qualifies for the VIP line in most casinos, I rather enjoy it.
Okay, so when it comes time to deciding which player gets which mailer, can you tell us what goes into that process, that decision-making process, and whether or not how much the player actually loses factors into it?
Right. About 2 years ago, we finally figured out, because of certain advantage players, I don't need to mention anyone in the room, that maybe we were rewarding the wrong people. So we changed the criteria to where coin in was not the only criteria, and we came with theoretical win, actual win, a little bit of time played. We came with a little more diverse type of. Type of rating, and in the last year and a half, my business has increased in slow times 20 to 30 out of 30% of some of my play. So I think for my first 4 or 5 years, like I said before, I think the wrong people were getting the better mailers.
Wrong people meaning. People, video poker players, over whom you have a very small, if any, edge.
Well, I got to say, in my top group, over half are still video poker players. Not everybody plays as well as you guys do, thankfully.
Well, we're actually thankful for that too. If everybody played as well as we do, then there would be no chance to gamble with an edge because the casinos would be much, much tighter. So. Now, it used to be that if they played, for example, video poker played 10,000 a month, and I think that's the number, but I'm making it up, they qualified for a mailer. It might have been $5 a week, might have been $10 a week. Do you know if you currently have a minimum, or does it still depend on, in terms of coin in, or does it still depend on win or loss, theoretical, those kind of things?
It depends on everything. We try to do, we go by numbers of people, the top people, the top 300 people, the next 300 people, the next 4,000 people, the next 10,000 people.
So you grade on a curve.
This is somewhat on a curve, and it depends. A lot goes into it. We do make mistakes. We do adjust. You can't go by actual win because if a good player happens to hit a big jackpot 1 month, You can't, you know, they're going to show where maybe they, you know, they're not that good of a player. So it's a very, it's something that there's one lady that now just handles that every month. And it's worked out well.
Okay, so you mentioned Advantage players, and I've heard at the South Point, Advantage video poker players have had their cards revoked. And when this happens, do you explain why it's happening, and does the player have the opportunity to appeal this decision?
Usually, Advantage player, we don't have to explain it to them. They know, but I'm saying we do.
Sad but true.
An Advantage player is not a thief. He's an Advantage player, and what we do, we just don't let them play with the card. The place is still open to them. They can still gamble in the place. They're still treated as well as anybody, but they just can't. They can no longer be in the club. We made a couple exceptions and brought people back, but it's rare. I think we barred. I might have 30,000 poker players. I think we've barred like 140 in the last 2 years.
And you say occasionally you let them back. So if they wanted to appeal it, they would see Ryan Groney. Who would they see?
They see Cliff or Ryan or some. One fellow even got to me.
Well, so
I'm saying I think we've let three of the three back in, but it's rare. And one of the fellows we let back in, we later took his card again.
Well, don't tell him I said so, but Cliff shaves his head and looks scary. So I recommend you go see Ryan.
You've got a better chance with Ryan than Cliff, yes.
In blackjack, your properties have had a history of backing players off. And at the Barbary Coast, we used to say that if you were walking by on the sidewalk, you had a good chance of being backed off on the playing blackjack, even if you weren't at the table. And that was an exaggeration, but the worst thing you could say is you're so bad you can't even get barred at Barbary Coast. So let's say a player is backed off at South Point, and then 2 weeks later he comes back, and then you back him off again, and a month later he's wearing a disguise and comes back again. And how long does this go on before you get a little bit nastier?
Well, it's the same thing. A card counter is not a thief. A card counter is a form of an Advantage player, and he's treated as such. I've been running my casinos for a long time. I've never been sued by a card counter. I've never had really a dispute with a card counter. A card counter is not barred from the establishment. A card counter is barred from playing 21. He can still shoot craps. He can still play the slot machines and the poker machines, and he can still eat in the place. But by the third or fourth time they keep coming back in and trying, then they may get 86'd.
So read the Trespass Act or something.
Yes.
So the South Point is your only casino, but are you friendly with any of the other casino owners and ask each other for advice?
Not as much as we once did, but I was very close to out of Frank Fertitta Jr. I'm still close to the boys. Bill Boyd and I are still very close friends about Boyd Gaming. It's not quite what I say. You don't have a lot of individual owners anymore. I don't. For instance, I don't know if I walked into the Flamingo Hotel today, I don't know one person in there. From where it was 20, 30 years ago, you just don't know anybody. At Harris/Caesars, I know Mr. Loveland. At the MGM/ Mirage, I know Mr. Kikorian, Mr. Murren, Mr. Baldwin, and Mr. Macbeth. But if you get below that, I don't know anybody anymore. Times have changed, and I'm sure they don't care what I think.
Okay, so George Maloof would never call you up and say,
"Oh no, well, okay, George, I ran, uh, I, or uh, up to
you had the sports book there.
Just now, I used to run their sports book for them.
Uh-huh.
And George and I were good friends, and George and I would talk a little bit. But George ran a little more of a different operation than I ran. George is more of an upscale yuppie type of place.
Uh-huh.
Where I'm a little more down with the local people.
Yes, the ladies at your place are older and they wear more clothes.
How close are you to the people at the M? And, you know, let's say one of you wants to do something really big. Might you say, we're going to do this on this date and let us do it and try not to compete with us and we'll return the favor another time?
I was good friends with both Marnells at the M.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never met anybody from Penn National, so we never made it. And the M was a little a lot more upscale than the South Point. So we never I'd just say the South Point's main competition is probably the M, Green Valley Ranch, and the Orleans.
Orleans, rather than Gold Coast. I mean, Gold Coast has much better games in it than Orleans does. Poker game.
The Gold Coast has become primarily an Asian hotel.
Yes, a lot of Filipinos.
I shouldn't say
there.
That, but I'm saying they're
mainly Filipino. Uh huh.
So I don't think I lose much to the Orleans, but to the Gold Coast, but I'm saying the Orleans and I are both hybrid, what I call hybrid casinos, in that we cater to both the local market and the tourist convention market.
Yeah, and they have the big arena, which in some ways is comparable to your equestrian centers. It's not the same, but
I built both.
Yes.
The Orleans Arena is probably the nicest 75 seat arena in the country, and it's very upscale and it's very nice. I spent about $65 million building the arena, the Orleans Arena. I spent $15 million building the South Point equestrian arena.
Uh huh. The online gaming, Nevada, is likely to allow online poker soon. Starting 4, 5, 6 months ago, southpointpoker.com came out, had software you could gamble on a regular basis for free. Prizes were strong. Nine people each month competed for a $10,000 seat in the World Series of Poker, and you were giving away something
each week.
Each week, and you're giving away $100,000 a month. Now, so what's the status of Nevada online poker with respect to South Point?
The that free site I did through a different site. That was I rented a site for that. My free game will be coming out soon on my own.
Uh-huh.
My own software, and for the intrastate. My license is already in.
Your application.
My application is already in for licensing. I personally think that Nevada somewhat slowed down because they thought the feds were going to pass a nationwide. It doesn't look like that's going to happen for a while, and. And now all the states are coming with their own licensing. So the internet poker is not going to be as lucrative as one would have thought that it might be. I think in California they're looking to give it to the Indians, the card rooms, and the horsemen, and it takes a $30 million downstroke.
Significant barrier to entry,
and they're only those people can have it in California. In Illinois, I believe that the Illinois lottery people have gone to the state and said we'll be joint partners in Illinois, and we want the exclusive for their net poker. So what Poker Stars, what Full Tilt had, Nationwide Poker, that's not going to happen again.
Well, it could be legal. I mean, it could be sometime legal for Poker Stars to be with Americans again.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but they won't have a nationwide. They're going to have to go state by state by state to get licensed in those states.
Uh huh.
And that's and somebody and that and a lot of people they're just coming to realize this as we talk today. Getting licensed in Nevada gives me the right to have intrastate. It does not give me the right to be in California or to be in Arizona. It looks like every state wants to license the individual for their state.
Doesn't sound like such a lucrative deal.
No.
Okay. You have that big statue of Benny Binion on his horse by your escalators, and I'm pretty sure I recognize that statue being downtown at one point. So am I right? And if so, how did you get the statue and why?
After the Binion sold to Harris, I tried to buy the statue, and Harris did not want to sell the statue. I tried with the next owners, and they didn't want to. And then Terry Cottle from the Four Queens bought it, and he was somewhat of a friend of Jack Binion's. And I said, Jack, I says, how well do you know Terry? And he says, well, I know him. I says, ask him if he wants to sell the statue. The Binion family and the Gaughan family were very close. And Terry Cottle sold it to me for $1.
To charge tax, sales tax?
And on the condition that I fixed the place where it was kind of in the back there, I had to fix the area it was in. I had to demolish the thing was on and fix the area, and then I got the statue. I brought the statue out to the South Point, had it in the back. It took three porters, 3 days with a heavy oatmeal, trying to clean all the bird droppings off the statue.
Oatmeal?
Oh yeah, the gal who built this, the gal who sculptured it, Deborah Copenhagen. I called her and she said, "Don't use anything except heavy oatmeal and terry cloth tiles."
Really?
And so we spent 3 days with oatmeal, and I didn't, but people did. Now we had to get it into the place, and we had to cut a hole in the wall and bring it in. And bring it through the one side of the casino, just like the Trojan horse coming out of Troy.
Well, good. I'm glad to know about oatmeal. I get a statue of a horse for my house. I'm glad.
Yeah, congratulations on getting that.
Yes. The almost every slot club, you can find out your point balance by inserting your card. And it says, "Welcome, Bob. You have 23,319 points." Not at the South Point. It does say "Welcome, Bob," but it doesn't. It'll tell me how many points I have earned since 3 a.m. this morning, but it does not tell me what my balance is. Why is this?
Well, you can go to the kiosk and get your balance, but you cannot get your balance at the slot machines.
You can get your point balance at the kiosk or your dollar balance. I thought it was just dollar. Maybe.
Maybe you might be right. I don't know. I don't have a card. I thought point or dollar value. My slot manager believes a matter of security. He doesn't like a people who find a card be able to find out what the point value is in that card. And that's been our thinking, right or wrong. That's what our thinking has been.
But you'd still need to know somebody's PIN number before you could use it.
Well, they've had some major scandals with the cards in this town.
Yes, but many of them are... The booth was involved on
what's inside
the scandal.
Yeah,
when the booth is involved, they have extra access they have access to the points.
Right.
They have some screen that gives them a balance. So,
I've tried to talk Cliff in doing it the other way, and he believes, and I've not been able to convince him.
I'll have to work on him, and maybe you can forget that I said he looks scary with a bald head. Okay.
Okay.
Probably wasn't a good idea on my part.
Sports betting. It used to be that the South Point and the Palms and the El Cortez and maybe the Cannery casinos all had separate lines in their sports books. And then one day there was they all decided that they were going to all honor the same lines, and I think that they joined into a community thing where they all contributed to the same pot and each got a pro rata share of the profits. Is this true, and why did they do that?
Well, I think this started originally with Vic Salerno when he came with his small sports books in places that did not want to have the expense of running one. And then more and more of the hotel chains got to where they started putting their sports books together. And for instance, when I was at Boyd Coast, we had 9 locations. And that's just the wave. That's what the future is now. Cantor's out getting as many sports books as they can.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have William Hill out. You see the MGM Mirage Group. Their sports books are combined. The Harris sports books are combined. That's just the wave. It's not done so much to control the line as it is that you control the pool to where you lessen your risk in one place. It's just more of a shared risk.
I see.
We briefly mentioned it earlier, but promotions at South Point are a little bit different. Now, you appear to design the promotions personally there. You write out the rules personally there. So,
how do you know that?
A little birdie told me. I think Birdie's name was Michael Gunn.
You've been known to write them out with me once in a while.
I've actually... he showed me a list of rules, and I have lots of things that he should change in his rules. Some of them have to do with an apostrophe and those kind of things. I tend to get anal about being a copy editor, but we haven't set up a meeting so we could go over these things. But I have lots of suggestions on your old rules. Be that as it may, what makes for a good promotion for both the house and the player?
A promotion or contest, there are 3 parts to it. The first part, which probably is probably the most one that's the most important one that's violated the most, is the giveaway what you say you're going to give away.
Not like the Boyd on President's Day, where they were giving away $13 million, mostly to dead people who had to come in and.
I have no comment on that. But I'm saying you give away what you say you're going to give away. You try to keep the contest as simple as can, and have as many winners, and you kind of have a balance between a big winner and lots of winners. So some contests have a lot of small winners. Some contests have one big winner. Some contests have a combination of both. My last 2 major contests, I gave away almost as much as I said I would give away. We had some forfeitures that I didn't quite get there, but if I say I give away 800,000, I'm going to be up over 700,000, and everybody wins, it's going to be 900,000. So we try to do that. We have one big winner, several small winners, and then you get down to where the buffet promotion. The buffet promotion is, you know, everybody damn near wins with the buffet promotion. Buffet promotion.
Meaning play 300 points to get a free lunch buffet.
Yeah. And if they stay and play 300 more, they get a dinner buffet.
Yes.
Or if they come in late and get 600 points, they get the dinner buffet.
Yes.
But that's probably the bottom tier of promotions. A lot of people like that.
Do you ever like to do promotions like paying 2-to-1 on a blackjack or something like that, where it's event based?
You can't do that anymore.
Well, not that specifically, but for example, paying double on a royal flush or something like that.
We do have those promotions in the poker room, where we have the bad beat jackpots, for example. The problems with promotions is you can wear them out. What used to work great for me 2-3 years ago, don't say they're not as good today.
Because the players are smarter, or they're still less interested?
I think the a little bit of both, Bob. I think it's like I remember one time I gave away at the Gold Coast I gave away cruises.
Uh-huh.
Where everybody wanted to cruise. And gave away like 300 cruises in 1 month.
How many were collected?
Maybe out of the 300, maybe less than 60.
Huh.
Everybody wanted the cruise until they won the cruise, and then they took the money. But it was the fact that you, well, same with the cars. You dangle the car every we've done it both ways. I'll ask you, Bob. We did it both ways. We had the car promotion, and then we had the money promotion, which was similar.
Uh-huh.
And everybody liked the car promotion more, but the car promotion cost me less in the end. A lot of people took the cash.
One thing nice about the car promotion, we at the like the Palms has the car is. If it's worth $20,000, they will give you $16,000 in cash if you don't want the car. And South Point will do that too. But last year when Shirley won one of the cars, they would give her the total check of the amount of the car, which she could use at Finley Toyota to buy whatever, if she wanted a more expensive car, which she did. So they gave you the full value of it, and then they could apply it to what you want. We thought that was pretty cool. So that was a very nice price. All right. We're about out of time. We want to thank you very much. Was there any last point you wanted to tell our people before we let you go?
Nope.
We tried not to be too hard on you today.
Nope. In fact, you were easier on me today than you were in the first one that we lost.
Do you remember the tough question I asked before? So we can try it again. So, no, we're not going to do that, huh?
But it was no. Thank you. It was very nice, and you know, maybe next year we'll do it again.
Thanks for coming on the show.
We're going to hold you to that promise. Thank you. All right, Michael. What did we learn today?
Oh, we learned about how casinos rate their players in terms of what mailer to send, and I thought it was interesting that. The South Point does it on a curve system where the top 300 will get the best and the next 1,000 will get the second best or however they make those break points.
Yeah, I've had a lot of meetings with Mr. Gunn. I didn't know that one. And so you find yourself, for in order for you to get good mailers, you have to root that the other players do poorly this month so that, they get jackpots. So that their mailers go down, and then that will boost your mailer up. So you have to root for everybody else.
Well, Bob, can I interject right now?
No, your time is over. Can't say anything.
It's not done. It's not done over 1 month. It's done. It's done on 6 months.
6 months, 1 month removed. So, yes. Okay.
Okay. So listen. I stand corrected.
Very good. But perfect. All right. So. Very good. Our commercials this month are going to be a little bit different, partly because we're taping the show in the middle of March, and it's not going to end until the last day of March. And so I don't know what all the promotions are at the casinos in April, which is going to be right after the show. Now, South Point usually has double point days on major holidays, and Easter would qualify for that. And so right now, I'm assuming that they're going to have double points on Easter. I do not know that, but it wouldn't surprise me. They are still going to have the 10,000 games returning more than 99%. They're still going to have they have a new seniors tournament on Thursdays in March. Presumably, that will continue in April. Whether it will be the same or it will change, time will tell. The Palms is ending there. They're having their last drawing, just two nights after the show airs. I will not be in it because I'm not going to be here. And I have no idea what their drawings and situation is going to be in April. They're still maintaining their loss rebate for new card members. The card members need to be non-Clark County residents. And their rebate is up to $500, and it's done over three different time periods, including immediately and up to 6 months and up to a year. There has to be at least 14 days since the last time you collected your free play money, and you have to do it in person at the booth. There have been people in the past who brought busloads of new people on these new member promotions, and presumably the Palms is taking measures so that that type of thing doesn't happen again. The videopoker.com, the free tournament this month is on Triple Play, and it's going to be ending the 31st. The winners gets a round-trip airfare to Las Vegas and up to three nights at the MGM Signature and an entry into a charity poker tournament for Opportunity Village, which was going to happen on April 7th. And that tournament is sponsored by videopoker.com. And if you wish to enter yourself, it is $300. And the top prize there is a seat in the World Series of Poker. Opportunity Village is a charity which helps people with who are intellectually disadvantaged. All right, Michael, what else we got?
Shall we talk about some upcoming guests?
Oh, perfect. Who's next week, I think, is Beth?
Yes. Next week is Beth Houston, who is the daughter of legendary Ken Houston.
Uh-huh. And how old was she when he died? Early 20s, maybe?
I think she was 27. And we're going to talk about her dad, and I think this will be a good way to respect the memory of one of the greatest blackjack players of all time.
At least he was one of the best self-promoting blackjack players of all time.
And he was good at that, too.
The next week, we're going to have another blackjack legend, one of the Blackjack Hall of Fame members. And who's that going to be?
We're also going to have Don Schlesinger on the following week. He is... I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame yet. He's always up on the list every year, but
is that right? He's not on the Hall of Fame.
I don't think so. Who won last time?
Ken Anderson, the guy. Ian Anderson.
Yeah, Don is always on the list, and I always vote for him. But anyway, Don wrote the book Blackjack Attack, and he used to write a monthly article in the Blackjack Forum. Is that what it was called?
Yes, and Arnold Snyder's publication.
And he's definitely one of the what's the term for it?
Colorful?
One of the elder statesmen of blackjack. He's been around for years and years, and used to be involved in blackjack teams, and used to train blackjack players in the Northeast, and knows the game about as well as anybody.
So there's also the illustrious 18, which is his way of simplifying blackjack.
Yep, that was his concept, and those are the 18 most important index numbers that the card counter should remember.
Uh-huh. So, very good. And what else we got? We got about 30 seconds.
Do you want to hear a quick joke?
Sure.
Okay, a man comes into a bar to play poker, and there's usually a game going on in the back, and he sees a dog sitting there at the table, and he thoughts, I didn't know dogs would play poker. This is incredible. So he stands from afar and just watches the game for a little while, and he sees the dog just acting normally and doing everything all the people are doing, and no one seems to be paying him any special attention. And finally he goes to one of the other players quietly and says, you know, I've seen a thing or two in my life, but this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. That must be the smartest dog in the world. And the guy says, shh, he's not so smart. Every time he gets a good hand, he wags his tail.
Very good. And with that, we'll see you next week. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes.
Bye, everyone.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge, with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. My-